Blog Talk Radio.
The following podcast is scheduled for one fall, and it is for the January 4th, 2022 edition of NXT New Year's Evil. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and this is PWT Talks NXT. Now, I am here with I'm with one of the normal idiots here. Kelly is off tonight, and I am back after a two-week-long hiatus. No, I wasn't spending a good holiday away somewhere. I was moving. So that was fun. Not really. I haven't been paying attention to much of anything lately, so looking forward to talking about this show tonight, catching up on NXT. And Tom, you here to do that with me?
Hey, yes, I am, at Tom Staupe on Twitter, and I am not here to say I told you so. Guess which promotion I'm talking about. Oh, that's low. I shouldn't do that, but I did pre-plan it. You know what? Is it going to come up later? I don't know if it's going to come up later, so I'm just going to say listen to the VIP edition of the East Coast cast that went up recently. Too many names on it to list all at the top here when we need to talk about an NXT episode, but some of the best audio I have heard in a while, and it's on Torch VIP, so listen to it. Important stuff from the voices you want to hear it from. So I'll just throw that out there. Unplanned plug there. What else? Oh, I hadn't missed a week of this in a while, but boy, I was busy last week and wasn't even able to do 8YB. So I'm glad to be here talking some New Year's Evil with you, Nate.
Yes, glad to be here. Glad to be here. And I hope you had a new Happy New Year and a good Christmas yourself there, Tom.
Thank you very much. Yes, it was very, very nice considering our global circumstances. But yes, it was very, very nice. Likewise for you, my friend.
It was quiet. It was a nice quiet day where I didn't have to spend moving stuff. But then I just went right back to it. I should have hired a mover. Next time I'm hiring a mover, I swear.
Yeah, I think doing some quick math, I think I was around your age when I finally resolved to do that with moves going forward. And yeah, it's expensive, but boy, it's
worth it.
Yeah.
I did it last time and I didn't do it this time. And God damn, I regret it. But talk about my moves and my regrets from not hiring a move. We just had an NXT title change. We had the main event of NXT New Year's Evil. We saw Tommaso Ciampa versus Bron Breakker for the NXT title, and we have a new champion. Bron Breakker went over Tommaso Ciampa. You know, I should probably pull up Bruce's All Perspective report so I could get you guys some times. But while I do that, Tom, talk about the main event.
That's what I was doing. I was looking at my browser as we did the open, and then my brain went dead, and I was like, I was. It's like when you walk into the kitchen, and you're like, what did I go here for?
Why did I come into this place again?
Yeah, and I derailed my own self with the East Coast plug, which is an important one. Everybody should listen to that. But what I did intend to say is that tonight was Doc Bruce's, Bruce Lee Hazelwood, as he's credited, his first night officially on the Alt Perspective NXT report. So you can check out his report normally alongside that of Kelly Wells. Tonight, Kelly is on the NJPW beat for Wrestle Kingdom. And Doc Bruce will be joining us more frequently. We haven't really figured out the rhythm of how that is going to work yet, but we've had this podcast started with four people. So we will get there, but you'll be hearing Doc Bruce's opinions in audio form more often. So this was not a sure thing. We had discussed how at this point in the Ciampa Breakker feud, it was definitely a realistic possibility that Breakker could win. I felt that the move here was to keep it on Ciampa because there were still storytelling. There was still some storytelling to mine, I feel, out of the Ciampa championship. Breakker is also the only person Ciampa has feuded with for the title, so that makes Ciampa seem kind of transitional here, although he will be forgiven since the brand is reverting to a much more forwardly developmental model. I still didn't expect this. I will say that I felt it was easily the match of the night, a night full of objectively good action, but I felt, and you know, I'll be reaching for stuff to talk about when we talk about other matches, because basically my whole story there is that It was just action for action's sake with very little storytelling going on. This match, the story was at the forefront of every single move they did of Breaker trying to live up to his spot and Ciampa trying to hold down his fort. And I definitely respond to that when they can imbue some storyline and some acting and some character into the moves they're making, and they're not just moves because these moves are cool and we're good at them. And Breaker has really risen to this spot, a lofty spot for being this young in his career. But I just, you know, I'm not sitting here like leaping out of my seat or anything. It's just sort of like, okay, here we go. It's yet another step into this. Honestly, this pertains more to the AJ Styles promo, but I feel like NXT has done such a conscientious job of trying to gradually psychologically segue their devotees, the core fan base that didn't erode away, segue them into being loyal to this new paint job. And this is where they decided, okay, we're going to take the step of not – Ciampa's not holding your hand anymore. This is Bo Dallas winning the championship, where it's somebody that was getting some resistance. And, you know, we heard in the audience that Breaker's found some support, at least there in the PC anyway, here in Orlando. But this is the person that they go with where you're kind of like, I think most of the audience is going to turn their nose up at it a little bit and be like, oh, God, him. But I say again, as I've been saying for so long, that is what NXT was supposed to be. We've now got somebody that is still proving themselves with the title. The title represents that, like, they are anointed the same way Seth Rollins was anointed, and, you know, things have panned out pretty darn well for him. So yeah, I like seeing this. I mean, it's entirely possible we just get like an obligatory challenge from Pete Dunne or something like that. But I hope we can move to a 2.0 versus 2.0 title program now. And hopefully we can start moving toward that across the board more, which we'll see in the Dusty Classics, I think. But, you know, those are the Dusty Classics. So smaller beans there. But, yeah, I think the storyline is really there for Waller to be a major – and the seeds were already planted for Waller to be a major challenger to Breaker. I mean, I was thinking Ciampa, but now it'll be Breaker. Oh, they could still do a personal feud with Ciampa. But that's enough talking from me. What do you think, Nate?
So I kind of was thinking Waller myself. The other person that I was thinking of, and this is a shot in the dark, and it's kind of just because I can't really think of what the hell else to do with him at this point, would be Roderick Strong. And that's simply because he lost the match tonight, so no longer has the cruiserweight title. We'll talk about that obviously when we get there, the unification match. But he where does he really go from here? So unless he challenges again for the North American title, I feel like they've been pushing Roderick Strong and Diamond Mine for a while now. And where does Roderick Strong go? I mean, that there isn't a title in between the North American title and NXT title. I personally, like, even though I'm sitting here bringing it up and I'm talking about it, I can't really picture Roderick Strong in the NXT title scene, but I could see Diamond Mind in the title scene. Like, I could see Malcolm Bivens getting behind Strong, and I could see the Creed brothers standing tall behind him and things like that. But again, I'm here I am, like, I'm saying it, but I'm not even convinced myself. Waller was the first one that really came and stood out to me, especially with his work tonight with AJ Styles. Well, not just tonight, but his work overall with AJ Styles. I feel like Waller has the makings of being an incredible heel. I feel like he already is. I love what this guy is doing so far. And I think he'd make a great first, 2.0 challenger for the title for our new champion. But overall, I thought, as you said, or at least I think you said that you thought this was your match of the night. This was definitely my match of the night. Tommaso Ciampa is my guy. And I wrote this in the Hits and Misses, he's probably like my favorite wrestler in wrestling right now. And I know he's kind of like in the twilight of his career, things like that. There's just something about Ciampa that really resonates with me. I love the guy. So I hate to see him lose the title, but I knew it was inevitable. I I really went into this tonight knowing that Ciampa wasn't going to win. And I know, you know, we kind of said it was a little bit up in the air and things like that, you know, past couple weeks, but yeah, I kind of saw this coming, because why would they continue with an old black and gold stalwart like Tommaso Ciampa when they're trying to push this new 2.0 narrative, this new 2.0, you know, like, well, this new fresh paint of coat, coat of paint. I listened to Bruce Pritchard's podcast too much.
There you go with your Pritchard.
Yep. I got to admit, I love something to wrestle with. Anyway, mostly just because I love listening to Bruce Pritchard's bullshit. But anyway, I forget what I was saying. Oh, yeah, this new with Tommaso Ciampa, he is the black and gold brand. So why would you continue with him as a champion when you did have somebody like Bron Breakker kind of waiting in the wings, ready to take the title? Now, I mean, I've said on the podcast before, I feel like I wanted him to have a little bit more time before winning the title. In retrospect, I think I honestly said that kind of selfishly, just simply because I didn't want to see Tommaso Ciampa win it. Again, he's my guy. I just wanted to see him be the champ. Completely selfishly, has nothing to do with the business, the NXT, and I just want him to be the champ. But I do feel like Breakker is, out of anybody in 2.0 class, probably the most polished. Carmelo Hayes might be a close second, maybe even a little bit more polished than Breakker, now that I think about it, especially with his mic skills. But Breakker has that look that Vince and company are looking for a champion. And I think he can pull it off. We're going to see what happens, you know, over the next handful of weeks, months here with him as champion. But I'm actually oddly looking forward to it right now. I didn't think I would. When Bron Breakker first debuted and we kind of saw him in that trajectory towards the title, I was not really looking forward to it, but he's grown on me. Definitely he's grown on me, and I'm interested. I'm curious to see where this goes and how he actually handles this role. I feel like he's been able to handle himself pretty well so far, considering how young he is, but he's grown up in the business. His uncle and his dad, I mean, come on, you don't have many people better to learn from, you know, especially in the immediate family. So, but anyway, I'm looking forward to this. I think this new iteration of the champion, this new champion, is going to be I'm optimistic. It's going to be like a good era, if you will. So I got my fingers crossed anyway.
Yeah, I think it'll be real interesting, especially once we get to the 2.0 versus 2.0 feuds. Like, especially when we have to stop classifying that, oh, well, this is a 2.0 wrestler versus a black and gold wrestler. I think once they really get into that, we'll be able to sink our teeth back in the way that we used to. I like, since Breakker beat him clean recently, they'll have to find a diamond mine adjacent angle, some sort of Malcolm Bivens sort of thing to get him into it. But I do like your Roderick Strong thought. I think possibly the other advantage to keeping Ciampa around, when I was thinking they would, was that's not how I meant to phrase that. Sorry, I was looking at something else. Another thing with keeping Ciampa around was that I was thinking Breakker might not be long for the brand, and that is still possible. But I am interested in seeing what a real Breakker title run here will look like and what it will do for the perception of NXT. And finally on the matter, I'm just going to say good riddance to that big foam X. Every time they displayed it, whether it was on the stage as part of like the show, or whether it was just in the lobby, or they even had it backstage with wrestlers posing in front of it. And there's a foam N and a foam T probably under a sheet somewhere. They always looked weird. So, you know, I'm glad they sawed that thing in half.
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad you brought the entrance up and that, you know, the foam X and the chains and everything. That really was foreshadowing for me that he was going to win the title. Like, I came into this match, like I said earlier, thinking that he was going to win, and that entrance I thought was cheesy as all hell. I didn't really like it, but it had a lot of symbolism, and there was really no way that I thought he was going to lose here. But with that, let's go over to the phone lines and see what you guys want to talk about. So with that, we're going to go to 814. 814, I believe this is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct.
All right. I'm good. Ryan, what did you think about the show tonight?
It's probably one of the better shows of the year based on the card and the title change and the announcements and so forth.
Excellent. I agree. I thought this was probably one of the better 2.0 shows. A lot of wrestling on the card tonight. Probably a little less than most takeovers, not this is a takeover, but you know what I mean, branded event. But still, I think overall it was a great show. What do you got? So, what else do you got for us tonight?
Okay, my first question is on Rick Steiner. I saw a main appearance after the cameras went off. I guess gave his son a hug. Has Scott Steiner been around too, or just Rick Steiner?
Oh. To be honest, I don't know. I actually haven't seen any, because as soon as the show gets over, we start getting ready for this show. So I haven't been on social media or anything to see that he got a hug from his dad or anything like that. To the best of my knowledge, Scott Steiner, unless something has happened, Scott Steiner was like basically blackballed from the company. I know there were a couple events where like there were pictures of him up for security not to let him in. I think it was a Hall of Fame. Not to let him in and things like that. I know it was a few years ago, but nothing that I have particularly heard anyway has allowed me to believe that Scott Steiner's kind of been welcomed back into the fold. Granted, this new connection with his nephew might be different, but Tom, have you heard anything different than that?
I have not. I have nothing else to add, although that is a nice little picture of Rick. I was like, oh, wait, which is which? Rick, the one that I'm looking at as posted by Sean Ross Sapp is of Ciampa shaking his hand.
Nice. Ryan, what else do you got for us tonight?
Okay, second question is on this Dusty Classic. Do you see any odd pairings either in the women's or men's tournaments like a Tiffany Stratton and this Wendy that was hanging backstage? I think it's just to be your standard tag teams?
Man, that's a good question. It's a good question. I haven't put a whole lot of thought into that myself just yet. I look up and down the card. Tom, do you have any idea? I hate to do that, but do you have any ideas?
No, it was sort of half jokingly, half not jokingly in the back of my mind on New Year's Eve. Like, I need to resolve to have real answers to Ryan's questions, because Ryan always brings it with some challenging questions. Really always appreciate your calls, but I part of me knew this was coming from somebody, whether we're going to get an email about it or something, and the Dusty Cup just bores me to tears, so I didn't even want to think about it past the established teams. I guess I probably shouldn't be surprised, but I guess I'm slightly surprised that Gacy and Harland are going to do a tag team thing for it. Fill in a spot there. We probably saw the formation of one of the odd teams for the women's side of things, you know, in that backstage segment. But I'll continue to put my mind to it throughout the show, and if something pops to mind, I'll blurt it out. But at the moment, coming up empty. Sorry, Ryan.
Yeah, and I'm even going up and down. I'm looking at the roster right now, and like nothing for an odd pairing is really standing out to me. I mean, I guess like Tiffany Stratton and I think she called herself Wendy Chu, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That could certainly be interesting, but obviously I think we'd want to learn a little bit more about both of them before. Well,
yes.
Especially Wendy Chu before anything. God, from Mei Ying, just such a badass character to sleeping in the back.
Looking like a ham sandwich.
Right.
Whatever. Is that a thing? Is that when
I have no idea.
Maybe Ryan can tell us if that's a thing or not. I've heard go ham, and I know what that means, but I don't know what looking like a ham sandwich means, or whether or not it's a compliment. Would it be too been there, done that to put Dexter Lumis with someone?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not like it's going to be
about
Gargano.
How about Dexter Lumis and Duke Hudson?
That could
Ooh, that could be interesting. That could be – yeah, I don't know. That's weird. I'm thinking that Dexter Lumis and Danny Burch. Danny Burch doesn't have a partner anymore either, and he's still technically on the roster.
Oh, my goodness.
The only thing that I could think of, and it's not really an oddball pairing, but it's the first thing that really jumps to my mind. And this really, I guess, all depends on how long Zoe Stark's going to be out, if she's still technically injured or not. But maybe putting Io Shirai and, like, Sarray together, which I could see them doing simply because, hey, keep Japanese women together because that's what they always do.
They tend to do that. And just to throw it in there, Zoe Stark is still rehabbing. She was able to, I want to say maybe like a week ago, she was able to switch to a smaller leg brace. And I have that highly exclusive inside info thanks to, you know, her public Instagram page.
Hey, there we go. There we go. I barely do social media anymore. The other one
don't make me jealous.
So, you know what? I got an idea. So you brought up Dexter Lumis. What about Lumis and Thatcher?
Ooh, now you're talking. Yep, there we go. That's
like
the answer.
That.
I like it.
I like that. I think that's going to be our final answer. Final answer, Regis. Yeah, that could work. Thatcher hasn't been around. Lumis, I feel like the two of them could play off each other really well. It could even be relatively comedic, too, depending on if they wanted to go face or heel. But yeah, I'm kind of digging that. Ryan, how about you? What do you think about that, Thatcher and Lumis?
Yeah, I guess it's possible, but yeah, I just don't know. Yeah, I'm familiar with the Lumis character pretty good, but not as good with the Thatcher. I think it's more technical.
Oh yeah, definitely a styles clash.
So I guess my final question is: in the developmental, do you think it's a good idea to be doing like triple threat matches, since this is like a, you know, like a learning process? You'd think like you'd want to get down singles matches first, especially like when you're to say young, like Cora Jade, like being 20 years old. Do you think that's like a mistake for developmental?
So, I mean, this is me obviously playing armchair quarterback here, but this was at least my thought process. I wrote this in the Hits and Misses as well. So the triple threat made sense to me for a couple of reasons. A, because it made sense in the story, but also because it could potentially hide some of Cora Jade's shortcomings, since she is so new and is relatively green still. I think she's absolutely shows some promise, or a lot of promise, and I think she's got a good upside. But I feel like they could kind of use that triple threat angle to kind of hide and protect her a little bit while Raquel and Mandy were wrestling, or, you know, helping her through the match. That's at least my thought. But again, I mean, with the exception of one weekend, I've never really been in the ring or anything like that. One fantasy camp. I'm not 100% sure, but at least that's my thought. And that was what, that was one of the reasons that I kind of thought they may have gone to the triple threat as well, you know, to kind of protect Cora Jade a little bit, because I don't know how Cora Jade and Mandy Rose, if you put just the two of them in the ring together for, you know, a 15-20 minute match, you know, if she would have been able to hold her own. What do you think, Tom?
You know, I appreciate this framing of the conversation about the triple threat, because my takeaway was that Mandy Rose was the most experienced wrestler in the match. And I have been a defender of Mandy Rose, but, you know, take that statement as you will. It is a fact that Mandy Rose was the most experienced wrestler in the match. And I think it showed, and maybe the triple threat format does contribute to that to an extent. You know, we can talk about Cora Jade, and she does need seasoning, but Raquel Gonzalez, who is someone that I always say I feel bad beating up on because she's always shown some inexperience, but for a long time there, she was showing less and less as she went along. And it's just been a plateau for quite a while now with her, and it's become more egregious. And in some DMs earlier, I compared her to Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan's matches against Becky Lynch recently, I think, really showed like almost every spot she's doing, it's like she has to think about it. And then she's like, okay, I got to do it the way we practiced. And then she's got to stop and think and be like, all right, what's coming next? All right, got to make sure I do it right. Are they in the right position? Am I in the right position? And that's all the sort of stuff that any wrestler is going to be processing, any good wrestler is going to be processing, but they get more experienced and more quick and more natural and more second nature with all of it. And that isn't happening with Liv, and it's not happening with Raquel. And maybe it will be yet to click with Raquel. But she was the one I was looking at primarily, just the same way I was in her match recently against Dakota, where I was just like, man, and admittedly, I noticed it less there. And maybe, you know, you had some weapons, you had the one-on-one with a very experienced, very good wrestler in Dakota. Here, I was noticing so many holes in the game, and unfortunately, that really sank the match for me. So, maybe the triple threat contributes to that, and maybe it speaks to even a grander thing, because we've said the same thing about, like, when Persia Parada was in that ladder match. Just like, maybe people like Persia Parada shouldn't be in multi-person ladder matches at this stage in their career. So, it's the difficulty of, I guess, trying to draw TV ratings with a developmental product.
Yeah. And, you know, now just kind of talking about that, I think you might've talked me into that, kind of converted me over there. Cause like, that's something that I've noticed, not just with like Raquel, but other people that have come out of the PC as well, like Cal Bloom. Like, I always feel like he goes out there and he kind of looks around like a deer in headlights for a little while before, oh, snaps back to reality. Like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I even got that tonight with him coming out just for that quick promo against Chase, Andre Chase. I don't know how we're not talking about them, but I hear what you're saying. And I feel like I said, like, yeah, Liv Morgan, she's certainly one that does that. Raquel Gonzalez and, yeah, even Mandy to a point, they kind of have to stop and think. And yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying. Ryan, what else do you have for us tonight? Or if you want to elaborate further on this?
I don't really want to elaborate on that topic, but you had mentioned about that ham sandwich. Could that just mean that you're calling someone salty? Would be my guess.
Okay. See, yeah. And I'm still like, to me, if you're salty, that means that you're like you're a sailor, or you're, a good old boy, or, you know, a person who works with the earth or works with the sea. And the definition of that has changed recently, and I'm still not used to it. So now there are further wrinkles. Thank you for the clarification.
See, I would have considered that crunchy, not salty, but that's just me. All right. So, Ryan, was that it? Or did you have something else? I'm not sure what you said.
I don't know if you want to take this question, but do you see any extra titles getting added to the brand since they just unified like a woman's secondary title? Since AEW has a tournament going on, now you have to steal that idea from AEW.
I don't know if they have the roster depth right now to add a secondary women's title. However, I could also see them adding one for kind of equality's sake. There historically has never been a mid-tier women's title in WWE, as far as I can remember, as far as I'm aware anyway. Why not? I don't think it would be a bad idea per se. Again, you know, adding the equality, and then you kind of give the different tiers of the women's division a bit more meaning too. And since they unified those two titles tonight, we are down a title in NXT. There's part of me that says, like, no, don't add more titles. There's already a million titles in the WWE. Why do we need another? But then there's also that other part of me that's kind of like, sure, I kind of wish in a way they would add, and I thought about this in the past, wish they would add a mid-tier women's title, to at least one of the shows. Would be kind of nice just to kind of have that, especially where they've been pushing the women's wrestling so much over the past, 6 years, 6 years. I would be all for it. Again, I don't necessarily think that's where it's going to go. I think they were kind of getting, I think they're kind of downgrading and downsizing on the titles. So just one too many. But obviously we'll see what happens in the future. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I mostly agree with you. I think I fall more on the side of just like, please, fewer titles. I'm happy that this is silly of me. And I was so busy that I didn't catch up on last week's show, although I did listen to the podcast. I didn't even know that tonight. I thought it was just champion versus champion, and that's how they were billing it because they're both champions. I didn't know it was unification. So I don't know if they dropped the ball on advertising that or if I missed that development last week. Probably the latter.
Let's put it this way. I haven't paid attention for 2 weeks now because of the move and all of that, although I have listened to the podcast, and I did know it was a unification match somehow.
Oh,
don't know where I picked that up, but I did know that.
So definitely me. But yeah, I at the same time, though, I wouldn't argue against it because of the equality factor, which I do feel is important. And NXT, I believe, there's probably something else out there, but a brand that shows both men's and women's wrestling, I think NXT is the one that is the closest to being 50-50, as far as how much time and focus they get. And yeah, the men main event more often, but as far as like the time on the show, I think that it's the closest to 50-50. I paused there because I'm trying to run Impact's roster through my mind, but I haven't tuned into that show since I want to say last year. When was it? Jordynne Grace and Deonna Purrazzo had an Iron Man match or something to that effect. That was the last time I watched Impact. But anyway, yeah, I think that's where I'm falling on that one.
All right, sounds good to me. Ryan, anything else, or should we move on?
It's time to move on. Thanks for taking the call.
All right, definitely. Appreciate it, Ryan. We'll talk with you next time. All right, and so I guess with that, let's go over to the mailbag here. I'm going to go first to an email from our good buddy, JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Am I the only one who found the backstage women's tag segment cringeworthy? I'm not sure what was a cornier line that was obviously written by 50-plus-year-olds trying to be hip between Daddy, these girls are so ew, or stop looking at me like I'm a ham sandwich. There's a ham sandwich line again. Secondly, I read a report today from Sean Ross Sapp that Jeff Hardy was originally supposed to be in the role that Riddle is with MSK before Hardy was released. If this is true, do you think Hardy would be a good fit in the role? Would he have been a better fit than Riddle? Would the vignettes with MSK been better and more palatable leading into the match if Hardy had been the guru? And how would it have changed the match? As always, love the show and go VIP. So I have heard this myself, that Jeff Hardy was the one slated in to be the shaman. Actually, it got brought up in our Twitter DMs, our group Twitter DMs today. I believe it was Bruce that brought it up, if I'm not mistaken. We were talking a little bit about it. Here's at least my thoughts on it. And this is something Bruce brought up. Actually, I think it was Kelly that brought it up. Where I'm all for using Jeff Hardy in something like this, I don't necessarily like the idea of using Jeff Hardy in an angle that highlights his substance abuse issues. Yeah, they've done it before. I just think it's in poor taste. I mean, obviously, if the wrestler's cool with it, then fine, because they're cool with it. It's their life and it's their dirty laundry they're airing. I just don't think it's cool. I don't think it's right. And I think it kind of could potentially It could have the potential to like push somebody that has those substance abuses to kind of abuse those substances once again. That's my biggest thing with it. If I take that and put it aside, God, I would have loved to have seen Jeff Hardy in this role. I love the Hardys. I mean, I have those as a little kid, probably one of my favorite tag teams like ever. And I think it's obviously warranted to be the. They've held gold in I think every major promotion. I think it would have been a huge, huge, huge win for MSK to get somebody like Jeff Hardy, who helped to revolutionize tag wrestling in the 90s to kind of be what it is today, especially with the ladder matches, TLCs and whatnot. I mean, all you guys know I don't need to reiterate and rehash all this. You guys all know Jeff Hardy's history. So I think it'd be really cool to have somebody that had all of that tag history to be that shaman, to show MSK the way to be a better tag team overall. And I think that because like one of the things I also read too was that they really needed to scramble to reshoot the vignettes with MSK and Riddle after Jeff Hardy was released. And if that is the case, I think that kind of makes sense, because like even though Matt Riddle certainly fit as that guru, you know, with all the marijuana references that both he and MSK do, I mean, it certainly fits, but it did kind of seem and feel a little weird and a little rushed and whatnot. As far as like the match outcome and things like that, I don't know if the match outcome would have changed. I could have, you know, probably still seen Jeff Hardy get the win, just like Matt Riddle did tonight. I don't know if it really would have changed much overall. But again, who knows? I mean, we're not there. We're not in the booking chair. So we're not 100% sure, obviously, you know, where things would have gone. But, you know, I don't think it really would have changed things up too much. What do you think, Tom?
See, scroll. Did Riddle get the pin?
Yeah, Riddle got the pin after the RKO.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Huh. Because it was novel enough that he was there, and that's fine. And I even felt like this was absolutely a match made for MSK to win, because you want to validate the journey they've been on. It, as poor as it was, you still want to validate that. And Walter is also, you know, again, a match kind of without a story, like all the other matches other than the main event were tonight. But when you have the attraction of Walter, that is totally forgiven. So I guess it's probably second favorite match of the night, but he doesn't have the undefeated thing anymore. So of course he's not the one taking the pin. Of course not. He's still going to be extremely dominant when the fall involves him. But yeah, I felt this was a safe move, an expected move as far as the finish went. But yeah, of course Hardy makes so much more sense in the role. I think setting it up as a shaman of tag team wrestling and then having to go with Riddle feels much more forced. It did even before we knew that was not the original plan. I try to be the benefit of the doubt guy with certain WWE things. And, like right now, my thing is that I think Big E is going to win the Rumble and then retain at WrestleMania, probably against Bobby Lashley at this point. And great, because even though they've been wrestling for a year, they always have a different kind of match, and I think they have great chemistry, so I'm all for it.
You do know Big E lost the title, right?
Yeah, exactly. He needed to. Even before the Brock Lesnar thing, I was predicting that he was going to lose, because even though it was a fatal four-way, and usually those things are just a bunch of threat spectacle and not real threat, and the champion retains, like, you know, for example, Cena doing what? Did he... not F5, whatever his move is, when he FU'd Kane on top of Big Show or whatever. And it's like, yeah, there was no way he was ever losing that. But I still thought that the move would be for Big E to lose so he could win the Rumble and regain at Mania to remove the asterisk of having cashed in on Lashley to get his championship. Mm. But I've been there before, like with Kofi. When everybody got upset about Kofi, what was my reaction? I said, oh, well, let's let the storyline play out. Well, hey, guess what, Tom? There was no storyline. They just swept it under the rug, and Kofi, like, almost never – he didn't address it again for a long time, and I think there was, like, one passing backstage. I don't know. Different thing. But anyway, so here's me giving benefit of the doubt again, perhaps mistakenly, because, you know, the vignettes – had already been airing at this point. They had already, I believe, established that MSK had like a bag. And of course, even though they ended up just doing a Mary Poppins gag with it, the implication was that there were drugs in the bag. So that was already established before the Hardy thing, you know, fell through. But I would like to think that the greater focus on that and the higher learning or higher whatever it was that commentary has been saying, like the innuendo there, I would like to think that all of that is because it's Riddle, that it wasn't what they were going to do anyway, regardless of who was in the spot, but because it's Riddle, and that's much more a part of his character. So that's my benefit of the doubt there, although Kelly made a very good point that is definitely worth considering in a company that has brought up Hardy's issues before for storyline fodder. Yeah, I guess that's all I have on that. I actually enjoyed the women's backstage segment. I'm not going to disagree with JB about it being stilted and awkward and everything, but I like the people involved. I think every single person in the segment, I like that they're getting featured. Amari Miller, she's been a standout enhancement talent, and I like that she's getting named on the show and she's getting to talk in a backstage segment. It might not lead to much, but she's out there and she's interacting, and she's somebody who's really shown a decent ceiling of potential so far. So good for her. I love the Tiffany Stratton daddy thing. She's got daddy on speed dial and just like immediately complains to him all the time. And I'm just imagining like daddy at the country club hitting his earpiece, just like halfway through a swig of a gin and tonic. And it was a conversation on last week's podcast, who is daddy going to be? I don't think it's going to be anybody. I think the idea is that it's an empty threat and we're never going to meet daddy unless Tiffany Stratton gets a long enough run where they're like, okay, well, we need a storyline. We have to introduce somebody. But at this juncture, I don't think there is anybody cast nor anybody planned to be cast.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I don't think there is either. And this is actually something I forgot to address when I was talking too. I'm kind of with you here on that segment, the backstage segment. It was absolutely cringeworthy, absolutely cringeworthy. But I gave it a pass because, like, I'm a huge fan of Casey Catanzaro and Caden Carter. As you said, Amari Miller, she has impressed us quite a bit in her enhancement matches, and I'm glad to see her actually kind of on screen and on TV. Persia. I like Indy. You know, everybody that was involved there, I liked and I appreciate. So I kind of give it a pass, but yeah, it was bad. It was bad writing. 50 plus year old men trying to write for, you know, mid 20 year old women. That's what it certainly came off as. Absolutely. I will agree with that. So we're actually going to switch and go from the mailbag back to the phone lines. We had somebody come up in the queue here. And, I always forget to do this when I'm hosting the show. If you want, you can email us. That's pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Or you can call 515-605-9345 and hit 1. And who did hit 1? That would be our good friend, Darrell. Darrell, how have you been, man? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, you guys. How y'all doing today?
Doing well. I'm glad to be here after a couple of weeks. I'm all moved and settled into my parents' house for a few months until I can buy a house. But hey, I'm not going to complain too much. Just a little bit.
No shame in that these days, Nate.
I've been
there myself. Yeah.
Yep.
Good to hear from you, Darrell. Very good to hear
from
you.
Yes, indeed. So, what did you think of New Year's Eve tonight, man?
Sleepy. That's what I want to hear. I thought about it. Sleepy. I really only got to see 2, maybe 3 of the matches two matches in a segment or so. So, you know, and so I decided I wanted to call you guys and hear you guys' thoughts on a few different things. See what you guys thought about it. Because I fell asleep on a few of the on the most of the show. But the match that I did watch, Carmelo Hayes versus Roger Strong, I didn't mind that they joined unification. I guess he's gonna carry both titles, or they gonna revamp the title or something like that. That would be nice. Keep it the North American title, or what it is. That was the best match. That was the best match I've seen on NXT in a while, and it would be that Roderick Strong in it. But how did you guys like that? And then what do you think of that, of the impact of the Diamond Mine now when you have your de facto leader lose like that in a good match, and no shame of losing that match right there? How do you guys feel about just the overall of everything of that?
Yeah, so we touched on this briefly a little bit ago. We haven't really dove into it. So so personally, I agree. This was a fantastic match between Hayes and why is his name Roderick Strong? His name just completely escaped my brain for a minute. It was a great match between the two of them. I personally thought Strong. The main event was a little bit stronger for me, but this was certainly a fantastic match, especially to kick the show off. The way that I took it was that they're going to be calling this person the North American champion. That was the way that they made it sound when they were, doing the announcements at the beginning of the match, actually announcing Carmelo Hayes and everything. I feel like he probably will only wind up carrying the North American title. God, I hope they do not do anything to that title belt and change it in any way, because that is my favorite actual physical title belt. I love the design of the North American title. That's my favorite design in all of WWE. So I'm really hoping they don't touch it. But if they do, do it justice, please, guys, please. It would be cool to see, a new title or something to kind of like, show that this is a unified title or something, but they don't really need to. As far as Diamond Mine goes, like, that's what I was talking about a bit earlier. Like, I don't really know where Roderick Strong goes from here. He lost this title tonight. Again, like you said, no shame in losing. Somebody like Carmelo Hayes is up on the rise. I feel like Malcolm Bivens could easily talk his way, or talk Roderick Strong up and make it seem like, it wasn't that bad of a loss or whatever, and kind of sweep that under the rug. But again, where does he go from here? There isn't a title in between the North American title and the NXT title, and I really can't see him challenging for the NXT title. We obviously saw the Creed brothers tonight, throw their name in the hat for the Dusty Classic. Potentially they could become the new NXT tag team champions, which would be, give them the only gold in Diamond Mine. And I feel like the tag titles aren't quite as quote prestigious as the North American title anyway. So it's weird. Like, I'm not really sure myself where they're going to go with Diamond Mine. They've put so much time and investment into Diamond Mine. I feel like they felt like a threat, but only a threat if you're in the mid card, I don't feel like if they were to go up against, the likes of anybody, Ciampa or anybody up in the main event scene that, that they would have been able to realistically take them on. But even though they've been billed that way and they've been billed as like a force in the mid card, I can't really think about where they're going to be going from here. There's nothing that really comes to mind. Tom, anything in your head?
Here's me Googling again, and it's purely tangential. I'm going to have to look for it after I wait. No. Yeah. That's right. Okay. It was purely tangential. It's just one of those things that's been cobwebbing around in my brain that the other, maybe a month ago, I couldn't remember when the Roderick Strong turn on Pete Dunne happened, and I thought that it happened after. Now that I'm saying it out loud, it doesn't sound related to what you were talking about at all, but it was a Dusty Classic thing where I was like, wait, no, that didn't happen at, in just the title match. That happened at the end of the Dusty Rhodes Classic, right? But they had already won the Dusty Rhodes Classic, and then they used that to get into a title match at TakeOver New Orleans. So I was thinking of the right thing. It just wasn't technically Dusty Classic anymore. And that is a purely self-serving aside, because that sort of stuff just like rattles around in my brain and until I clear the air, even though I'm probably the only person in the world left worrying about it. But anyway, yeah, Diamond Mine, I've been saying this about Roderick Strong for a while. He seems like he's in the way. He seems like, I mean, his past two feuds have been totally random and out of nowhere, and here we're probably going to get Roderick Strong versus Von Wagner. And sure, that's a good person to put him with if his purpose is just to, you know, as it apparently seems to be, is just to give people good matches. You know, Carmelo Hayes doesn't need the help, but, you know, he worked a match with Breaker. He worked a match with Gaethje. And it was, you know, Gaethje is Gaethje, but it was still his best match, his best TV match to date. Von Wagner will probably have his best TV match to that point against Roderick Strong whenever that happens. So fine, but it's also, again, just something that's coming out of thin air. And so Strong has really felt purposeless, and I like the Creeds. I like Ivy Nile. I like them when they just go out there and do squashes, even though they haven't had the Creeds doing that in a little while. But Diamond Mine just kind of feels pointless, and Malcolm Bivens doesn't, as much as we know the guy can have a lot of potential in either a different role or, I mean, oh my gosh, like look at Malcolm Bivens can make stuff work to the extent that if you had flip-flopped him and Robert Stone, he probably could have made magic with Aaliyah and Chelsea Green, even with them being booked the exact same way that they were under Stone. And that whole program was atrocious, but Bivens probably could have taken that and made it extremely entertaining. That whole thing.
I don't doubt that
yeah,
at all.
So he's that good, but he's still, even though he's being allowed to show more than that now, he's still not showing a lot. He's still not being given the places to show a lot. And it just sort of feels like he's only there so commentary can say big money match about matches that we know really aren't big money matches, and it just doesn't work. So yeah, Diamond Mine is failing as far as I'm concerned right now as a stable, but let's see what happens if/when the Creeds win the Dusty Cup, which I don't think is a sure thing, but I would like to see it, and when Ivy Nile becomes more of a player, which I absolutely think she's capable of. As for the match, you definitely ran with it. You picked up on the same things Darrell was suggesting, but it wasn't until Darrell mentioned the title unification that in the way that he did that I thought of it as like tonight might be the opportunity to redesign the belts because they've got the old NXT logos on them and everything. And you're right.
Ooh,
the North American title.
I didn't think
title,
about that. They all have the old logos on them. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe they will be redesigning them all.
Yeah. You could even do it with. You could do it with the Toxic Attraction. Well, shoot. Everybody now, right? Yeah. Yeah. All the champions right now. You could just do it one night, and everybody just has new championships. I think I agree. The design of the North American Championship is really nice. Just. I would say update the logo and update the leather, maybe make the leather the color of the Cruiserweight Championship, and call it good.
I love that color.
Yeah.
That color brown.
So that I could definitely go with that. So, but yeah, I think this is where we finally see that because it has seemed inevitable since they did the new paint job. And as for the match, though, I will say, since I'm the person that likes my shows to open with promos, this show absolutely should have opened with a match, whether or not it was this match. This match probably just as good as any that could have opened it. And because they promoted this, of course, as being one of their mini, I know we don't use this term anymore, but like, you know, one of their mini takeover TVs. And you know, as a macro point, even though I'm down on a lot of how, you know, the action for action's sake came across to me throughout the course of the episode, I do appreciate that the matches were given time and it didn't feel like we got as much filler as usual. There was definitely filler there, but it doesn't feel like we got as much as usual. So it felt like maybe conceptually more of a success as far as the mini takeovers, as it were, have gone thus far. But so often with this show, the match at the beginning, we just rocket right into it. Somebody's already halfway through their entrance, or, you know, it's so fast-paced. And I really appreciated that they showed the wrestlers backstage. They showed them making their full entrances. There was characterization from commentary. There was characterization of the storyline with where there was storytelling with the shirt that Hayes was wearing, the Roderick Strong, like the death of his title reign shirt. And you know, Roddy just doing his thing with Hachiman. I thought that was all good, and I was ready to settle in and just be like, all right, I know there's no storyline here, but I'm ready for these guys to win me over. And they didn't. There was no in-ring story. It was just action. And, you know, when wrestlers are just like, hey, look at me being a good wrestler, and there's nothing more than that, I just can't invest. So I wanted them to get me, and they didn't get me.
All right, Jarrell, what else you got for us tonight?
I'm glad that you said that, Tom. That's what I was looking for. It wasn't no stories on nothing tonight. I guess that's why I fell asleep. The show was probably okay, but it was a little boring to me. I don't think they can tell in-ring stories no more on no wrestling show. And after the controversy of this weekend from another show, just looking at this stuff, and y'all was talking about a statement or two that I want to speak on that I'm speaking on next, and starting to see a few different things. You guys said it earlier that women's backstage thing was cringeworthy, and something else that was not good to me, but it was just having Von come out there, Von Wagner, and everything that he did, and not having no type of authority figure or anything say anything, threatening fines, just having him getting taken out, and it seemed like you can see him thinking to himself, what do I need to do, what I need to say, and it seemed like week after week he get worse and worse to me. And it's becoming in common with certain people on a lot of shows, and especially this show, that a lot of the cringeworthy segments or bad segments involve some of the same people. I was one of the ones who I know Tom liked Stratton, but out from her segments that they were doing, it felt that the character was bad. And 2 weeks in a row, to me, she has been cringeworthy from that segment I seen of her backstage and her in-ring debut. So is in common. How do you guys feel about their the storytelling of this? Because those segments were supposed to tell stories. One was supposed to tell a story setting up a match, and maybe something about the women, Dusty Classic, and that one, the tale of a wild man, supposed to be wild man, going awry and trying to dominate a setting, because they look like they set him up to be a potential probably first or maybe second contender for Bron Breakker. What do you guys think about that?
Hey, you were just talking about, you meant Von Wagner right there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of, in terms of like in match storytelling, like it's not like it used to be. I feel like they can still tell some stories. They are still telling stories in matches, but it's definitely not what it used to be. Von Wagner, I definitely hear what you're saying in terms of like his like promos and things like that. I feel like he comes out and week after week, he just, I'm not really there with like his in-ring or his mic work, rather. His in-ring work's okay. It's like, I mean, he's not the greatest big man in the world, but I mean, he's passable. The mic work though, man, like him trying to cut that promo tonight, you know, and I don't want to knock on the guy because he's got a, you know, speech impediment. He has a lisp. I grew up with a lisp. I can't, you know, hey, I had one as a kid. So I don't want to, like, you know, knock on it for that. But I think it's between that and just his overall delivery, it kind of, I don't feel like he is – like, he's trying to be, like, this badass, like, this heel, and it doesn't come across. Now, him actually attacking the crowd tonight I thought was a cool move. Now, obviously, they're plants. It's not really the crowd that you know, he's attacking. But I did think that was a bit of a cool move to kind of give him a little bit more heat and whatnot. What I did think was a little bit odd, and I didn't actually really think about it until you mentioned it, was there really – where was William Regal? Where was any sort of, you know, backstage authority figure to try and, like, you know, discipline him or anything like that? I even thought about that during the Waller and Styles segment. You know, they just said, hey, we're going to be the main event next week, and then it was. There was no – nobody made that match. Nobody said, hey, William Regal made this match or anything like that. It just happened. So I thought that was a little strange, a little sidebar. But, you know, Tom, what do you make of all of this before I just keep rambling about random stuff?
Yeah, it is sad that I also need it pointed out to me when there are inconsistencies like this, because I'm just so accustomed to them that they don't strike me. But yeah, I don't think we've seen Regal since the Index wedding, and his absence is felt. There are situations like the making of title matches where it feels like he should be there. And I say this, and neither of us saw last week's TV. Maybe he officiated the contract signing. I don't know, but yeah, it feels like on one hand, you don't want him to be grimacing behind Von Wagner being escorted out if they're not going to turn it into a storyline. But also, if they make him more of a consistent presence, granted, I know there was a period where he was being more careful regarding the pandemic stuff, and I don't know if he's back to that point. It's a question mark with Regal. I really don't know. I'm just fishing for possibilities. But if they were able to make him or a different authority figure, perish the thought that we would move away from Regal, but maybe if we had to, just somebody in that spot, you know, just being more of a consistent presence. So you could have the logic of them being there for the Von Wagner segment, but it not seeming like they must be teeing up a storyline, because it's just consistent that they are this person is present whenever this sort of stuff is going on and authority needs to be exerted. So I do agree there. I think that Stratton and Wagner are interesting people to be talking about at the same time. I say that not planning to ever do it more often, you know, moving forward, but we'll see. But I think both of them are very apparently raw. I see the potential. I especially see the potential in Stratton, as I've discussed previously. There was a question last week about her background. She is a United States gymnast. You can scroll down on her Instagram, and she's got a bunch of old gymnastics videos, and obviously she works that into her ring work, which, again, haven't seen last week's show, heard about what happened, really unfortunate. She did the same spot, at least what I understand, or at least a similar spot, on 205 Live, and it went fine. So it's really sad to hear that it did not go well on NXT. Didn't see it for myself to be able to analyze what might have gone wrong there. They're interesting to talk about at the same time, because both in promos and in the ring, they just seem so raw. But the difference is that I see the potential in Stratton myself. Like, I think she has the raw materials of what it would take to, like, if she stays consistent with it and if they stay consistent with her, they could turn her into something. That's just what I'm seeing at this early primordial phase. Whereas with Von Wagner, I think I'm more just resigned to the idea that they see something in him because he's the kind of guy that they see things in. And so now I'm just looking for the positives, because I know he's probably going to get at least like a 2-year run or something. And you know, I'm just looking for the things that I can latch on to, like, okay, all right, that was weird, but that kind of worked for me. Sure. And, you know, just trying to be optimistic about it. But yeah, I'll just leave it at, I really hope Kelly circles back and watches, at least scans through this show, because I DM'd him that you have got to watch this Andre Chase segment. I'm not going to tell you why. I really want to hear him eviscerate it.
Yeah, right. I'm actually glad you brought up the what you just said about Tiffany Stratton and Von Wagner, because with Von Wagner, that's exactly how I'm looking at him right now. Is I am resigned to the fact that they see something in him. Like I said, I like his ring work, but I don't like his mic work. Like I feel like he is still a work in progress. Now with Tiffany Stratton, and that's what I feel like is his body of work, and like just from what I've seen so far out of him. Now, Tiffany Stratton, I haven't actually seen her wrestle yet outside of a couple clips that I've seen on like Reddit and stuff like that. But just even in this little promo or this little backstage vignette tonight, I feel like she had a presence about her, and she kind of just like was the role. Like she fit right into that role. Whereas like Von Wagner, like I said earlier, sometimes there's times where I just feel like he's looking around like deer in headlights before, oh yeah, hey, okay, I'm back here. And you kind of, Darrell brought some of this stuff up a little bit ago too. People just kind of like not seeming to know what they're doing. I just kind of wanted to say, like, now that you brought that up, like, I agree with you there. I think that, I can certainly see something in Tiffany Stratton, and I thought I saw something in Cal Bloom. And I'm at this point, I'm kind of like just waiting to see what they see in him. Cause I just see another generic big man. I don't really see anything super special in him so far. So, but anyway, Darrell, back to you.
Okay. Now my last thing will be, the triple threat match. It was okay. I guess not too long, short. I understand the point. I just hate that when you bring in someone who's not new, but kind of is new to you, because I guess this is somebody you're going to use for the longer. And especially when you haven't resurrected the tag team that he's with to make people take them as serious, and it looks like you're going to have a Dusty Cup challenge. And they're not going to have a challenges for the title until the end of that. And if MSK doesn't win, that even breaks them down even more to not being serious and have them lose that match. With, to me, in the NXT atmosphere, the biggest person out of the three, out of the six people in the ring would have been Walter. And you wouldn't want to bring someone who you're bringing in, and they are and they get introduced to a loss or something, even though he didn't take the pin. I didn't think that was good on all fronts, especially when you're trying to rehabilitate Imperium as the tag team themselves. And I know you're trying to rebuild MSK. I just felt like the matchup as a whole might not should have happened. And it maybe could have been somebody else. Or you could have put the Creed brothers up against them, so they could have had a higher profile on a bigger show or something like that, or however you wanted to do it. But I felt like that was just a bad move, because I didn't feel like it served the purpose for any of the people that you're trying to rehabilitate. Because I don't think MSK gained anything from it, because I don't think they still got the rub off of anything from this match. What do you guys think?
So I'm okay. I agree. Like, I feel like this whole angle kind of like was, it just felt weird. And obviously it could have been, you know, like what we were talking about a bit ago with, you know, Jeff Hardy supposedly being in the Riddle spot and not being able to, obviously, because he got released in the company. So I mean, that could have been why. But yeah, overall, it did kind of seem a little like strange and rushed to me. MSK, I don't really feel like they are in much better place. Like, they had all these vignettes trying to find the Shaman. They find the Shaman. I thought this was a good six-man tag. It wasn't the greatest six-man tag, but it was a good six-man tag. But yeah, I mean, I don't really feel like they are elevated any higher getting this rub off of Riddle. Even though, like, you know, we were talking a little while ago where, you know, Riddle got the pin. It, in a way, like, it shouldn't happen that way. Like, maybe Riddle sets up something for the pin, but one of the guys in MSK actually, you know, is the one to get the visual win. Because MSK is the one you're trying to build up. Riddle, this is a one-off. He just, you know, he just scooted back off to Raw, as we saw afterwards. So he's not coming back to to be with MSK here, but he got the win tonight. I don't feel like it really did elevate MSK up at all. If it did, a very little bit. But I don't personally get anything like that from it. And as far as Imperium goes, like, they, after Walter left, you know, due to the pandemic and all that, Imperium, obviously, they kind of just became like that jobber team. You know, we talked about it here in the past and whatnot. They felt like they got relegated so far down the card. And any time that they were on TV, like, oh, yep, they're going to lose. But as all three of us know, they at one point were the force to be reckoned with in the tag team division, both in NXT and NXT UK. And they're trying to get there again, I feel like. But with this loss tonight, like, what does that do? It doesn't really do anything for them either. Imperium, they've gotten a couple high-profile wins. Obviously, they've won the tag team titles. But I feel like Walter's such a big deal. With him coming back, I really kind of felt like Imperium probably should have won this match. Again, I don't know. Earlier, I was even saying, you know, if Jeff Hardy was here, I could see him still, you know, getting the win here tonight. That is, if everything was completely the same and they didn't change anything, you know, due to any of the booking, due to it being Riddle, not Jeff Hardy. But I don't know if that was necessarily the right move, you know, to have them go over, whether it be MSK with Riddle or MSK with Hardy. I think the right move probably would have been to try and build Imperium back up to be like a monster force. Although, of course, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking to myself, well, but if you're going to have a monster heel, you got to have a monster tag babyface tag team to kind of go up against them. So I guess it doesn't matter which way you go, try to build up a team. But regardless, I feel like it should have probably been Imperium going over here tonight, building a little bit more of the credibility up with them, keeping their win streak going from, you know, winning the tag team titles. And, you know, make sure everybody knows Walter's back. That means Imperium, we're forced to be reckoned with. Tom, what do you make of all of this?
I guess the issue in that case is building them up against one another. So somebody has to take the loss rather than bringing MSK back in to face a different team and work their way back up. But, I mean, they'll probably be in the Dusty Cup and be doing that in essence anyway. But, yeah, I think, I guess, I wasn't a huge fan of this, so I'm not trying to defend it too much, but I think on one hand, I can say that the match with Riddle and Walter's involvement was enough of a novelty that I don't think the result damages Imperium all that much. Plus, you know, what I said earlier about, you know, this is the sort of thing you can do with Walter now. You don't want to do it often. You especially don't want him to be the one with his shoulders pinned to the mat often. But which actually, I don't think we've seen that because he tapped out to, we've still never seen Walter pinned in WWE. Well, anyway, you still obviously want Walter to be dominant as part of his, the attraction that he brings, but you can play this card. And again, it is enough of a novel match that I'm not overly worried about it. While on the other hand, that's probably not how I want to phrase that. But the other point I think in favor of what they did is just that, I mean, even though they were really terrible segments, they were doing these shaman segments, the road trip segments for what, 2 months, maybe even a little bit more than that. You have to validate that by giving these guys a win. Yeah, probably shouldn't have been against Imperium right away. But yeah, I'm not I'm not too upset about it. I think the real misstep was having Riddle get the pinfall. I 100% agree that, like, you know, sure, you want him to do the RKO at this, you know, with part of what his appeal is right now with the Orton connection. You want him to do the RKO. You want to get that spot in. But it shouldn't be the finish. You should have the Nash Carter and Wesley, like, each jump on the person that just got RKO'd for doing moves off the top rope, and then whichever one is legal get the pin, or, you know, something. Because it's about them. It's not about Riddle.
All right, Darrell, do you have anything else for us tonight, or shall we race for the race to the finish?
Okay, yeah, we can race to the finish. This one last thing. I don't think it validated them because neither one of them got the win. And you could continue to tell the story. If you a shaman, whatever, supposed to leave you with some type of profound knowledge that you build upon, and that's what you could have used this match as them taking the loss, coming close, fighting past, whatever, and then they take the loss. And then he lead them something, I don't know how, but he lead them with some words of encouragement and telling them you started the process of coming back. And then you introduce them into the Dusty Classic, and that's their way of coming back and telling the story and grinding back. And now you can see if the fans take to them and stuff like that. But, see, I think the problem is because majority of wrestling fans today and these wrestling companies, they don't watch sports. And the sport thing is not the young, hot rookie come in and he beat the old vet off rip because he young and he look a certain type of way. And that's how people take up on him. No, the sports story that they always want to tell is how you watch a person come up young and grind, and you can see them develop and put the talent together, and you can see it coming together, and you see it over the years, and you see them not one level off. They couldn't get in the playoffs, now they in the playoffs. Then they couldn't get out the first round, now they out the first round, and they battling through 7-game series or whatever, or a hard fought fight against Tom Brady, and you learned that he can't be the last person with the ball. You need to be the last person with the ball, and that's something that they don't hit on. That they didn't hit on that with MSK. They don't hit on it with a lot of the people like the Tiffany Stratus or the Von Wagner, because you see the talent. People see talent in them, but it be 5 and 6 years, and then you got a bunch of Dana Brooks and people like that who it never developed because they don't teach them the wrestling. Because I don't think they teach people wrestling anymore. They try to teach them to be sports entertainers, and sports entertainers be poor wrestlers. So that's why you never get the storytelling and stuff like that. And that's because I think they wrestling as a whole today don't watch sports, so they don't understand the concept. That's why you have 60-year-old men telling 60-year-old jokes and stuff and to young people and trying to get that develop, when most people just want to see people grow and become into something. That's why I feel like some people should not have characters. You should grow into a character. You shouldn't stick them with a character. But, yeah, that's it for me, and it was great talking to you guys again, man. It was good talking to you guys. I love it.
Likewise.
Absolutely. Anytime, man. Anytime. We'll be here. You know where to find us.
Yes, sir.
All right, Darrell. Thank you very much, as always. So we're going to go back now to the mailbag, swap back over here, and let's go to an email from our good buddy. Salutations, gents. Happy New Year to you all. While we're off to a slow start, thanks, Omicron, I hope this new year brings you each many blessings. As the show marks the beginning of another calendar year for NXT, what is one resolution that you each would want the brand to work towards in this new year as it continues to live in its new identity? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. So what is the one resolution we'd want to see them work towards this new year? I think, if anything, for me, it's just stay the course. I just want to see them stay the course. I don't like I've been very resistant to the rebrand because I loved my black and gold stuff, man. Wrestling is my comfort. Like, it, you know, when I'm stressed and stuff, like, wrestling's what I watched. And NXT, the black and gold brand, that is what I went to for years, even before I was doing stuff with the Torch. So if they're going to take my favorite thing away from me, at least stay the course and you know, continue doing what they're doing. I think they've got a good direction. They're starting to work some of the kinks out with NXT 2.0. Not 100%. We're not fully there yet, I don't think. But, you know, over the past few months now with this rebrand, every show I feel like is getting a little bit better. It's not what I'm used to. It's not what I necessarily want to be watching every Tuesday night in comparison to the black and gold brand, but we're getting there, and I just want to see them stay the course. I think that would be the one thing that I would want them to do. You stay the course, see them continue to grow developmental talent. I'd even like to see them continue bringing in stars like AJ Styles and Matt Riddle, you know, to kind of give some of these new guys the rub, especially if they're not going to be bringing in indie darlings anymore, and it's going to be homegrown talent. It's harder to get over that homegrown talent that doesn't have a name. They don't have any sort of a following or anything like that. You know, somebody like Amari Miller, for example, you know, it comes to mind. You know, and granted, she might, but I don't know. As far as I remember, she was a performance center person. But regardless, you guys know what I'm talking about. It's harder to get a homegrown talent over than an indie darling that already has a fan base. So I just want to see them kind of stick this course with, you know, with the higher, you know, the bigger names from, you know, Raw and SmackDown coming down here, giving the rub. You know, to these newer guys and girls, and have them grow and develop this brand into what they need it to be, which is kind of a breeding ground for the main roster, which is what it was supposed to be in the first place. So I think that's what I'm going to stick with. Tom, what about you?
And here I am on Google again, trying to see Amari Miller's prior matches. I thought I had done this before with her, but I'm not finding what I was looking for. Maybe I'm not on the right page of her cage match. But whatever. I was going to agree with you, and I do agree with you, although it's not my final answer. My original final answer was going to be that they should more or less stay the course. The way I was going to phrase it was, you know, get to a point where we can do much more routinely do 2.0 versus 2.0 matches, to the point where we're not even making that distinction anymore. Just, you know, stay the course, get us to a point where this is just the brand is as it started when it moved to Full Sail, and we're not thinking about it as the new NXT anymore. But as I was mulling that over, I remembered, oh yeah, much more than that, I would like them to get their asses on Peacock and get off of USA. So there's my final answer.
You know, and is that just self-serving so you can get rid of a cable streaming service?
You know, when I'm on the podcast, that's how I think of it. And then I get off air and I'm like, oh, wait, but then what am I going to say when Wade asks me to co-host a Raw Post show? You know, but is it really worth, gosh, they upped the price recently. What are we paying for Sling now, Nate? Because you're on Sling now too, right? Is it 45 now?
Yeah, it's something like that, which is still cheaper than what I was stupidly paying with YouTube TV. But still, like, yeah, I mean, basically, I pay for Sling just literally to watch NXT, and if, you know, Wade asked me to be on a post show, watch Raw, SmackDown, or something like that, that's literally the only reason I do it. Otherwise I wouldn't have a cable streaming service at all. Yo-ho, a pirate's life for me, if you catch my drift.
And like, even recently, I'll enjoy popping on the Oscars if I can. And that's usually, what is that on ABC? I think, and just recently I'm like, oh, well, I'm one of those people that I enjoy sitting at home on New Year's Eve and watching one of the shows. And I was like, oh, well, darn, I don't get NBC through Sling. I could if I got an antenna, but I don't want to do that. Just more out of laziness than anything. But then come to find out that Miley's New Year's Eve special was on Peacock. So I got to watch it anyway for free through my Xfinity subscription. So, get your asses on Peacock, NXT.
Yes, yes, indeed, indeed. All right, so we've talked about all the different matches tonight. Let's go over to, and there were a couple other things that happened backstage. Nothing really major, I guess, to talk about. So let's go to a final email now before we wrap things up for the night. Now, this email is a little strange to me, but we're going to roll with it anyway, because why not? This email comes to us from Zach. And it's addressed, "Hi Nate." That's the subject. And this email has nothing to do with NXT whatsoever. So I'm not sure why we got this email necessarily. I Tom and I were thinking that maybe this email was meant for another show, but it's specifically addressed to me. So here we go. "Hi Nate, any chance we can expect Brock Lesnar to keep the WWE Championship all the way to WrestleMania and end up having a title unification match with Roman Reigns? They could technically do that, I suppose, but the more likely outcome is Lashley defeating Brock Lesnar and he moves back to feuding with Roman Reigns for the WWE Universal Championship. Of course, I don't expect Lashley to defeat Brock Lesnar clean. I do think there's some interference on Roman Reigns' part. Also, will the two other matches at the Royal Rumble probably be Charlotte Banks and Lynch Bianca for the women's championships? I do believe they get those matches on the Royal Rumble card, but hopefully it doesn't drag out until WrestleMania. Really, with Roman and Brock around, they can afford to take chances with the women's division. I don't think it would kill WWE to have young and upcoming talent defeat Charlotte or Becky for the title. Actually having a surprise return like Bliss, Asuka, Bayley, or Lacey Evans, or even Ronda Rousey if she was wished to come back, wouldn't be a bad idea. Thanks, Zach." So we're not going to spend too much time on this because we're an NXT show. We certainly appreciate the email, Zach, but not going to spend too much time on this here. I think probably we'll kind of see Brock Lesnar versus Lashley. Is obviously on the card, is coming up. I kind of think what you're talking about with Reigns is, and everything is probably the way it's going to go. The interference on Reigns' part, I guess, really depends on how he is with his stance with COVID and his prognosis and all that. Granted, I guess it's probably been long enough now where I guess that may not be an issue anymore. Charlotte and Banks and Lynch and Bianca for the women's championships probably are going to be the matches that, at least in my opinion anyway. And I think they probably are going to get on the Rumble card. I don't think it's going to drag out to WrestleMania. I think they will get them on the Rumble card. At least I hope so anyway. Tom, I don't know if you want to chime in on this or anything, but if not, we can head for the hills.
Yeah, I think as I more or less suggested when I touched on it earlier, for whatever reason, the benefit of the doubt thing. Everything that Zach lays out in his first paragraph here, I do also expect to happen. I also expect that Heyman will end up back with Reigns after Mania, and that might even that will likely be a part of the Mania match. Will the other two matches at the Royal Rumble probably be Charlotte Banks and Lynch Bianca? It does seem that Bianca is being reinserted there rather than in the Rumble. Not that that's ever been an exclusive thing that excludes Bianca from participating in the Rumble. She is my pick to repeat, although I, and as far as Charlotte Banks, I have no idea. And that plays into my lack of certainty regarding the women's Rumble, because I just don't have as clear a picture of where I think the women's division is headed on SmackDown. TBD where Bliss is going to be reinserted or how much wrestling she's going to be doing. I know she's had concussion issues. They've been, they've tried to be very careful about and very carefully executed when they do want her to be involved in wrestling programs. Of course, Bayley, I would be thrilled about. I follow her very closely. Oh, yeah. I don't feel like she's given too clear of an idea of where her rehab is at right now, but you, Zach, you named two of my very favorite wrestlers, you know, in Asuka and Bayley, and so I would just adore for them to come back. I don't care if it's heel or face. I just love them so much. My eyes are glued to the screen anytime Asuka or Bayley are on. And you know what? I really, really like the mention of Lacey Evans. It used to be a running joke on this podcast that we genuinely spent most of our time talking about Lacey Evans. I think what we said was that if you made a pie chart of all of the different things that we talked about on this podcast, Lacey Evans would be the biggest slice of, or she wouldn't just be the biggest slice of pie. She would have baked the pie. and you know, just fits her character and everything. So, you know, good laugh at that. There I go explaining the joke, making it so much funnier because that's how that works. I think that Lacey's main roster run panned out in an unfortunate way and did not represent the promise that I saw in her in NXT. And I don't think that is a main roster failing, although having her in like a 3-month association with Baron Corbin didn't help. And I like Baron Corbin, but boy, that was a dreadful little program there. But they shot her right to the top, and they tried to put her back up to the top before she had to bow out due to pregnancy. But, you know, a quick look at her Instagram, and she is being the multitasking mommy, and she is there's a video on her Instagram right now of her doing sit-ups in the gym and rocking the baby's carrier at the same time, which just seems like, you know, such a Lacey thing to do. But I like that because I really do feel like she has the potential. I think her character is great. I love the women's right finish, even though the main roster never understood it or used it properly. It seems so simple, but they never did. They messed that up big time. So there's my big word salad about not knowing who's going to win the Women's Rumble.
But you know who is going to win the Men's Royal Rumble, right?
Johnny Knoxville?
Johnny Knoxville. Johnny Knoxville. He's going to be the next WWE champion. I guarantee it.
Steve-O.
Oh, God. Man, I couldn't believe that when I saw he's going to be in the Rumble. Like, what the hell? Oh, man, my favorite match of the year. And, you know, I kind of look forward to weird celebrity run-ins like that. Like, I still, even though Drew Carey is like, really quick run in the Royal Rumble was pretty bad. I still look back on that fondly because like it was kind of funny and I liked Drew Carey back. Like there was a big fan of Drew Carey's back then, the Who's Line and all that. But
wasn't as bad as Leno on Nitro, so you know. Or was that?
Oh yeah, jeez.
I said Nitro, but was that? I genuinely don't know.
WCW. All right, well, now that we started talking about WCW, I think it's time to wrap this show up, guys. So I am Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, and I have one already up on pwtorch.com for tonight's New Year's Evil. Tom, who are you?
I am at Tom Staup, and before I go to bed, I'm going to put that Joe Gacy promo from tonight on repeat because it will put me to sleep better than my melatonin gummies. And you know what? Check out speedwayvideo.org. That is the link to my YouTube channel. Last week when I was busy, that is what I was working on. I was putting up a ton of videos for a lesser seen league, or I guess I should say a league that doesn't get as many clicks. So it was legitimately the hardest thing I've ever done for my YouTube channel, and it is also like the lowest viewed thing. So if anybody wants to like play that while they're sleeping, that would be cool. But what would make me even happier is if you check out the Willing Creatures podcast. It's also a YouTube channel if you prefer that, the Willing Creatures actual play D&D podcast. This weekend's episode, the one that we'll be dropping this Saturday, I know I've tried to sell you guys on like, oh, this is a good jumping on point for our campaign that's literally been going on for 4.5 years. But this this episode that is coming out this Saturday is the last time I will try to hard sell you on this phase of the campaign, because we are going around and reintroducing our characters as if, you know, we literally like go around a table and like say who our characters are and what our deals are and everything. And the DM gives us at the end of the episode like new missions and quests and basically says like, okay, this is the last thing we're doing with these characters before we roll up new ones for campaign number two, which is when I'll try to hard sell you guys again. We'll be starting fresh, and that will be an even better jumping on point. But if you've been curious, but it's been a bit opaque because it's like, well, I don't know who the Scale Folk are, and I don't know who the Dark Falls are. What the hell are you guys, you know, adventuring with here? This is the point to check it out.
All right. And if you want to check out any of my other projects, natelindberg.com, you'll find links to this show. You'll find links to the hits and misses, and you'll also find links to my YouTube channel where we take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. We're on a little bit of a hiatus right now because of the holidays, and, well, it's really hard to move all of my computer equipment and edit a YouTube show at the same time. So I took some time off from doing all of that. We'll be back in a couple months. But if you'd like to check our backlog of I think we've got maybe a dozen or so games up now that we can we took a look at therapeutically, please do. You can find that at youtube.com/C/DegeTime, DegeTime. And speaking about TIME, it is TIME for us to go goodbye. So goodbye, guys, and we'll see you next week.